Hey folks, Intel is a sponsor this week, and I welcome them because they're bringing some high-performance developer tools for all of us. Check out Intel's Parallel Studio XE. I've talked about parallelism before on the show and the importance of using the complete instruction set, unlocking the power of the processor that your code is running on. Now, you all might be writing C or C++, Python, or even Fortran, but is your code building in such a way and written in such a way that it uses the latest techniques for vectorization, multi-threading, multi-node parallelization, or memory optimization? Intel Parallel Studio XE has a lot of new stuff for 2018 across all these languages. Get a free download at bit.ly/ParallelStudioXE, or certainly go and Google or Google with Bing for Intel Parallel Studio XE, and get started boosting your app's performance with smart parallel code with a lot less effort. Check them out, bit.ly/ParallelStudioXE. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Maurice Cherry. He's a designer and a producer at Glitch at Fog Creek, and he recently won the Stephen Heller Prize for his podcast Revision Path from the AIGA, the American Institute of Graphic Arts. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I've known you for a while, and just like my podcast, your podcast has been chugging along for a long time. You are definitely been in the podcast game for a while. You have almost 250 episodes at this point.
Yeah, we are actually, I think, factoring in our bonus episodes, we might be right at 250, but we're getting up there. We'll definitely hit 250 regular episodes in July.
That's fantastic. Like, I know that having hit, you know, I'm over 500 now, basically every week. Is your show weekly or biweekly?
It's weekly.
Weekly. So you've been doing this now 5 years plus. There's so many podcasts that are out there where people get into it for, you know, 11, 12, 15 episodes. They miss one and then they miss another. And then, you know what I mean? Then their weekly show is a monthly show. And then it's like, it's just sad. How did you stick with it for so long and not stop?
It really helps to have a plan and a schedule. The good thing with these interviews is that I do a lot of them ahead of time. So I usually try to put at least maybe about a month between the interview and when it airs, which gives me more than enough time to juggle scheduling, to handle any sort of editing issues or things like that. And I've really just been able to kind of keep on that particular path now for 5 years.
And you've been doing this for a while. You switched to weekly in April of 2013. Are you producing all of this by yourself?
No, I do have an editor, so that also helps. Mm-hmm. my editor, RJ, is worth his weight in gold, and he is the one that sort of takes the raw conversations that I end up having, and he sort of edits and shapes them into something. Now, I still produce the episode every week, so while he may handle the actual interview part, I still record every intro and outro and every ad every week, and I package the show together and export it and schedule it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my editor, Mandy, who is hopefully listening to this right now, if she's editing, is also worth her weight in gold. And so you won the Stephen Heller Prize, which is actually for cultural commentary. And you've also won awards like Most Inspiring Design Podcast. It's a design podcast for, about, and by designers, but it's 250 episodes and it is Black designers. So for someone who says there aren't 250 Black designers, it sounds to me like you've still got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows to do beyond this. You don't have any trouble finding guests.
Oh, no, there's no trouble with finding guests. And I should say it's mostly designers. It's not all designers. So I say it's probably a good mix of some designers, developers, and just overall creatives. I mean, we've had presentation designers, apparel designers. We've got software engineers. We have design educators. We've got a pretty good cross-section across, I think, design and development in terms of who we had on the show. And it's, of course, not just here in the U.S. We've had people throughout Europe, throughout Africa, through the Caribbean. I'm hoping this year to get to Asia and South America, working on that. So it's really kind of a good mix of what designers are doing around the world.
Mm-hmm. And are you, like me, my podcast is a side thing. I mean, I have a job. This is still a side hustle.
Actually, no, it's part of my job now.
Seriously, how did you hook that up? I need to get that set up. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm Fog doing this Creek on my lunch hour. I don't know about you.
Well, Fog Creek is a sponsor, but they're also gracious enough for me to do this right alongside my regular work. So with that, you know, we're also able to kind of bring the Revision Path audience along for things that we're doing at Fog Creek as it relates to Glitch. You know, if there are certain campaigns that we're doing or a certain, you know, audience or segment that we're trying to hit, then the Revision Path audience is, you know, kind of a built-in component of that.
That's great. And Glitch, of course, everyone's learning about and hearing about Glitch on Twitter because your CEO, Anil Dash, is like the king of Twitter right now. Glitch.com. it's a friendly community where you build the app of your dreams. It's not CodePen, but it's also not an IDE. It's something else.
Yeah, it's something else, all right. I mean, but what we're trying to do with Glitch is really kind of open up, you know, design and development for a new audience. We want to eliminate the barriers that, you know, kind of prevent people from wanting to learn how to create on the web. So you can either create a brand new blank project, you can remix any of the projects that we have on our website or in any of our collections. It's really open for people to just explore and learn and, you know, have a good time on the web. You know, we've taken out all the, you know, kind of barriers and jerky stuff that sort of prevents people from wanting to learn how to code or to really get active on the web. We want to bring the fun back. We want to bring back that sort of, you know, late 90s GeoCities, Angel Fire, tripod kind of fun with creation on the web.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is clearly designed in that it is thoughtful, right? It doesn't look slapped together. It has a design language, the buttons, the hovers, everything is clean. But it also has, and I don't mean this in any way to insult, it has a 90s kind of silliness or sloppiness almost. Like I was looking at a little cat popped up. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really think of a corporate site with a little cat in the corner. You click on the cat and then it talks about like, here's some new stuff. And then there's like a little dog with this. And then there's like, oh, here's an animated GIF from No Limit Records. Like it is both simultaneously well-designed and thoughtful, but also silly in its color scheme and its use of animated GIFs and stuff. It's kind of got a foot in both worlds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the kids these days would call that aesthetic.
Is that the aesthetic? Is that the Glitch aesthetic?
Imagine aesthetic in like a monoline font spaced out. People who are listening might know what I'm talking about. We do intentionally make sure that we have that kind of fun design so it becomes more approachable. You know, I really want to empower people to create. And if it just looks like some boring staid IDE, then people might not want to use it.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a great way to pick up, you know, Node programming, JavaScript programming, whether it be on the back end or the front end, and then maybe graduate to an IDE like Visual Studio Code at some point, you know, down the road when you've learned what you want to learn.
Yeah, and with the way that we have set up, you can even, you know, export to GitHub if you are more familiar with GitHub or you want to graduate to using, you know, kind of a different environment like that. You can even do that. You can import repos from GitHub just to kind of play around with and test out. It's really flexible. It's really, really flexible.
What is this rewind feature? I'm trying to understand what I'm looking at. Is this like source control, but it's done like a DVR?
That's a good point. So Glitch Rewind is a new feature that we came out with not too long ago because we just came out of beta. And what Glitch Rewind does is it reinvents version control and undo. You know, when you're learning something or when you're really kind of trying to figure something out, we want to put that confidence back into coding. So with Rewind, you can undo any of your mistakes at any time just by clicking the Rewind button and dragging the scrubber across the timeline back to a point or a state in your code where things were better.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I've been running around trying to break it, figure out what I can do to break Glitch because, you know, hackers always got to try to figure. And I was moving too fast maybe and I got some kind of an error. And it looks like you are using Git underneath. So you're almost teaching them source control without making them think about Git.
That's right.
That's pretty slick. It's a really nice way to get people up to speed, but it's in a safe place, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, it's a safe place. It's very easy to share your work. You can invite others to work on a project with you. And even if you get stuck on anything, there's also another new feature that we have put out. I think we're sort of internally calling it hand raise, or at least that's how I've heard it called internally, where you can highlight a line that you might be having a problem with. and a little icon will appear next to it. And you can click that and get help from other members of the Glitch community.
Right. I'm inside of a server.js right now. There's a line here that says App Express. If I don't know what that means, I can click next to it, and then a little person pops up. I can click on that. It says Ask for Help from the Community. And then it gives me a URL. That means the community could be within Glitch or it could be on Twitter. And I could say, hey, what's this line? What's going on here?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is cool, though. But I'm fascinated to understand how you're going to make money off of it. But it certainly got people excited.
Well, you know, I don't know if I'm really qualified to talk about how we'll make money off of it. But certainly we've gotten people excited about building on the web again. That's really, I think, our primary goal right now.
Exactly. It definitely feels like the GeoCities of the past. And it's also nice that the name of your project becomes then the subdomain. So I could then pass, you know, foo-bar.glitch.me off to someone and put it in my portfolio. So this could actually allow someone to build a project and then put it out there and say, look, I made this, stick it in their LinkedIn or tweet about it.
Yeah.
It's pretty slick. I'm digging it. So you are working as a content producer and a designer, but I noticed when we were setting up for this podcast, you were running Windows.
Yes.
Is that weird? Do you feel like out of sorts? I thought you were required as a designer like to run Mac.
Oh boy! Oh, the dilemma of being a Windows only designer. I've been
What
using
do you
Windows.
And the other Windows developer, the Windows designer, feel about that?
I mean, so I've just always been more comfortable using Windows. I have used, you know, Macs before. I mean, certainly I think everyone of a certain age has probably used the Apple IIe. And even when I was in high school, we had like Power Macs, I think, or Macintoshes. But once I got into college, I just switched over to Windows and that was that. I mean, for me, it's just been a more comfortable environment to work in. I wish that there wasn't this weird, stupid division that I think parts of the design community put up between Windows and Mac as it relates to the tools that we use. I hate that it's gotten divisive to that point where Mac users have these special design tools that only they use that they're trying to sort of make industry standard, but it can't become industry standard if Windows users can't use them. Yes, I'm talking about Sketch. I don't like that kind of sort of weird division with kind of the way the design tools are right now. But I don't think being a designer and being on a Mac are like requirements, you know? I think it's that way because perhaps, I think it's more of to use that word aesthetic again, I feel like it's another kind of aesthetic choice. People think that, you know, Macs just look better. They, you know, render the fonts better or what have you. Maybe the tools are better, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, as a designer, the tools that you use, I think, are not important. You know, if you're on a Mac or on Windows, if you can design, you can design. So I don't like the fact that the tools are kind of furthering this weird separation when it's sort of standing in the way of having designers create. That's how I feel, at least.
I think the idea of the aesthetic or the sense of like I've bought into this ecosystem, like, I mean, I'm team iPhone because I approve of the aesthetic, but, you know, it feels like my space. It feels like my place. And presumably you use Windows and I use Windows because we also feel like that. But then you feel like, well, but now this tool I want to use isn't available to me on this platform. So what do you do when the app you want is on the other platform, but that doesn't feel like home?
You know, I'm not all Windows. So like my main computer and my work laptop are Windows, but I also have a iPad mini that's mounted to my desk. I'm looking at it right now. Mm-hmm. And I have an iPad Pro. So there are some things that I will still kind of use the Mac ecosystem for. Now, granted, I don't think Sketch is it's not available for iPad Pro. So there are some things that I still would not be able to use because there's a difference between, you know, Mac OS and iOS. So I mean, tool-wise, I don't know. The only issue I really run up against is Sketch. I found that there's always going to be a crafty developer that might create a Windows version of a Mac-only kind of tool. Hasn't really happened with Sketch yet. I guess you could call Adobe XD that, but I don't use that either. So it's
are you like a Creative Cloud person?
I am a Creative Cloud person. I am mostly these days in Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, and Premiere, and a little bit of After Effects.
Yeah.
And Audition, of course, for audio.
Yeah, exactly. Myself as well. I got the getting the Creative Cloud subscription has been super useful. Actually, I like the way that everything is moving to subscriptions like this. I know some people don't dig it, but back in the day, I didn't have $500 to buy Word or $500 to buy Photoshop, but I can probably swing $19.95. And
yeah, and I mean, for me, my job pays for it, so that's even better.
So you got this great, fancy job and let you work on your podcast and free software. That's cool. A big thank you to our sponsors because they make this show possible, and I hope that you support them the way they support us. Progress Software is the creator of the most comprehensive developer toolkit for building modern apps on the market today, Telerik DevCraft. With more than 1,100 Telerik.NET and Kendo UI JavaScript components and controls, you can easily build modern, high-performance web, mobile, and desktop apps, as well as chatbots. The toolset also includes reporting solutions, automated testing, and productivity tools, and comes with a range of support options. New this year is a free online training program for all license holders. With this, alongside thousands of demos and source code available, comprehensive documentation, and a full assortment of Visual Studio templates, you'll be up and running with the Progress Telerik and Kendo UI controls in no time. Download a free 30-day trial today at telerik.com/Hanselman. That's TELERIK.com/Hanselman. So it sounds like being a Windows developer, you are a Windows developer in the Fog Creek offices, but they're still cool with your choice, and it hasn't been a huge problem with this kind of, you know, design monoculture.
No, it really hasn't, because the work that I'm doing is, at least the deliverables, I can do them easily in Photoshop. I mean, there might be an issue where maybe something exported from Sketch might look a little wonky in Illustrator, but even then I found a workaround because there might be someone else on the design team that has Mac, so they can kind of work with it if I can't. Now, I don't know what everyone else remotely is using. There might be some other remote Windows users, but certainly I think with the design elements that we're doing with Fog Creek, we're mostly Mac, and then I'm the outlier.
Mm-hmm. These new design sites that are out there, like people see my blog and they'll try to steal the design or they'll steal my CSS, and that is what it is. But the thing that I'm noticing the most right now online are these design sites where I can buy a theme for $5.
Mm-hmm.
It'll make it difficult when in the past you'd have to pay a designer, you know, for their hourly wage or, you know, their time, $500, $1,000, or thousands of dollars for a full site. What do you feel about these inexpensive logo sites and theme sites and what that says about design on the web today?
I mean, I think that those marketplaces certainly have a purpose. I think the problem happens when consumers tend to think that equals design. A lot of people might think that these marketplaces have kind of cheapened design because of that. But if anything, I think it's only further commoditized it to the point where they will go to a designer that maybe doesn't have something on theme for us, but they think that they're able to kind of use these same types of tactics and bargains, like, do you have discounts or do you have packages or things like that, where most designers, at least I know independent ones, will try to come from a place of value as opposed to just a strict, you know, sort of dollar amount, like it costs exactly this much. I think there's a place for them. I mean, I've used them. I'm not going to lie. I have definitely used them before, because sometimes you just need that $5 theme for something really quick and dirty that you need to just throw together and put it up there.
Yeah.
But then it depends, I think, on what the value of what the value is that your end result is going to be. So if you're trying to put up something, I don't know, maybe if you're putting up a blog or something that you're not really making any money off of, I mean, yes, you probably should go with a designer that can make your custom thing, but you may not even know if you like the blog. You may not even know if this is something that you continue. And so if you put maybe a $40 to $50 investment into a theme and it doesn't pan out, you've only lost $40 or $50. You know, if you go to a designer, maybe it's a different conversation of, you know, thousands of dollars, perhaps. Different tools and different kind of things that you buy, I think, are okay. I mean, I've even flirted at some point with putting little templates or icon packs or something up for sale, because sometimes you just need that one thing. Hmm. You may not need to always go to a designer to get the full package, but it depends on what your project is. You know, if you're a multinational, you know, multi-million dollar company, and you're only going to theme forest or something like that, that might be an issue, you know, because you certainly might have the manpower or the budget to hire someone or to, you know, bring on a designer to actually do something more custom. But
I see. So you're saying that these $5 themes are making, you know, design and presumably design of some quality available to regular folks like, you know, like myself and the listeners. But then at some point you have to decide your corporate identity requires a custom setup, a custom design, and it's time to start paying someone some money.
And also, I mean, you get what you pay for. I mean, if you pay for something that's $5, the other thing that these marketplaces do is that they really don't give you that much of a preview of what's under the hood. You don't really know what the documentation or the options panels or anything look like until you've purchased it. I know that I've bought some things and I've gotten the documentation and everything, and it's trash and I can barely use it. But I paid X amount of dollars for it, and oftentimes you can't get that money back. So it can be a little bit of a crapshoot, but you get what you pay for.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of we get what you pay for, I'm starting to be frustrated as I see people saying, give me some design, I'll give you exposure. How do you feel about that?
I mean, exposure is for cameras.
So not a fan.
Not a fan. I mean, the thing with the internet is that anyone can have some level of exposure. I don't buy that whole, oh, if you do it for XYZ exposure thing. I really hate when that comes, particularly from celebrities who you would think would know better. You know, I mean, I think it's one thing if they feel like you have to pay your dues, but nah, I don't buy that.
Somehow it seems like the celebrities they're the ones that we think have the most money, but they're the ones that get the most free stuff. Why don't we get free stuff for the people?
I mean, politicians do the same thing. So
yeah,
it's kind of that same thing. If they can get it for free, they will.
Yeah, that's not cool. So you've interviewed 250 plus designers, developers, front end people, I don't know about you, but I've always struggled a little bit with imposter syndrome, the idea of feeling like a phony. When you look at that kind of like crush of talented people that you've had on the show, do you think that all these visible designers are giving other designers a sense of imposter syndrome? I mean, there's so much great design on the web right now.
I think sometimes that can happen. I know there are times when I reach out to people for the show and they've seen that I've interviewed, you know, a Christy Tillman or Eddie Opara or, you know, Sarah Honey Young or someone like that. They see that I've interviewed these well-known designers and they'll say, oh, I'm not at that level yet. Mm. Oh, I'm not there yet. And oftentimes I have to tell them, well, that's the reason why I want to talk to you. I don't think it's the one thing that I think I really like about Revision Path is that I've tried to get people at all different levels. I've got students, I've got captains of industry, I've got educators, I've got junior designers, I've got senior designers. I think it's more important that they just tell their story about where they're at, because where you're at is not where you're always going to be. So even if someone thinks that, oh, I'm not good enough to be on here or whatever, I'll tell them, if I've reached out to you to be on the show, I feel like you have something that's worth sharing.
Hopefully
they don't feel that way, but I do know that some do. I mean, I certainly have gotten pushback from folks that will say, oh, I don't know if I'm ready, if I, you know, that's the other thing, if they're ready. And I'm like, well, there's never really going to be a ready. You're either going to do the interview or not do the interview, but they feel like they have to get to a certain point in their career in order for people to talk to them about their work.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I mean, you get to that point by talking about what you're doing every step of the way. So people know what it is that you're doing. So they see that you're visible and you're out there and you're working and you're hustling. If you're just staying in the sidelines and grinding and thinking someone's going to, you know, notice you, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, it really is a challenge because people, you know, you don't want to say fake it till you make it, right? But at the same time, there self-promotion without self-promotion, like it's okay to own your awesomeness and be like, you did something awesome, own it. And that talking about, hey, I did a thing and it makes me happy and I did a good job, I don't think that necessarily is saying, you know, look how slick I am.
Right. I hope it doesn't. It really shouldn't.
Yeah, I hope not. And I've had similar issues trying to get people on my show. I had a guest on recently who was concerned they couldn't fill the half an hour. And it was pretty clear that I could have talked to them for 90 minutes or 2 hours, or maybe that they could have done an 8-hour you know, session, like an entire workshop. There was such a huge amount of information. 30 minutes goes by like that.
Yeah.
When what was the environment like for designers online when you started Revision Path 5 years ago, 6 years ago?
What was the environment like?
Like online, were there a lot of visible designers? Were designers personalities that you would go and say, oh yeah, I know that name. I know Honey. I know Chrissy Tillman. Or is that a new thing, the star designer, the visible designer?
No, I think the visible designer has always been there because the problem that design media has is that they tend to regurgitate the same 7 or 8 dozen people out on conferences and podcasts and things like that. So there's always been that level of visible designer. I think the problem is that visible designer has always looked one way. It's always been, you know, one certain type of person. And so the look of what a designer could be or who a designer could be is, I think it's drastically changed since I've started Revision Path. I don't want to be boastful and say that I've really helped to change it a lot.
I think we just said to own that, though. Didn't we just talk about that?
So, I mean, I hope that, you know, with all the people that I've been able to interview and get out there, that I've helped to change those perceptions. And certainly people that I have interviewed for the show have now gone on and they're doing, you know, really big and great, amazing things. So it's changing that definition of what a designer looks like and what a designer can do and who a designer should be. Mm-hmm. That has definitely changed a lot since I started Revision Path.
I'm curious if you think, what do you think that white folks or non-black folks who are listening and they hear that there is a show that's all about black designers and it you know, talks to black designers and front-end developers, what do we tell them about the importance or why a show is needed? Like what does race matter for web design?
Well, I think it matters because there's not just one particular race of person that's using the web. So there certainly is not, you know, more than one particular race that's building the web. I mean, the web is out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to have just, or you don't want to at least showcase just a certain type of designer designing things for a big, diverse, global audience. Mm-hmm. You want to show a diverse, global group of designers that's doing the same thing. I think people will look at Revision Path and they'll see our archives page and they see this wall of black faces. Mm-hmm. And they might think that as a monolith, but there's a lot of diversity within that monolith. There's young, old, gay, straight, trans in the US, not in the US. They're across all different parts of the design industry. Some are developers, some are public speakers, some are educators. Like there's mm-hmm. a huge swath of diversity in what could be viewed as just this sort of monolithic set. And I can tell you, you know, for I'd say maybe 90% of the people who I've had on the show, it was their very first interview. And it was their very first time anyone had ever really talked to them seriously about their work. Mm. And these are people at all different levels, not just, you know, junior people starting out or anything like that. This is at all different levels.
Yeah.
It's the first time anyone's ever really cared to talk to them about what they know and why they love what they do and why they're a designer or why they're an illustrator or anything like that. So I think that is what is really important, is that every designer has a story to tell. And I think it's important to kind of hold the mic and let them tell that story.
Yeah, I really feel I have always long felt since I met you many years ago that I felt a kinship with Revision Path that I also feel with the show that we're on right now, which is that there's, yeah, you have some famous people on and yeah, you have some really accomplished people on, but I love catching people on the come up and then going back and saying, hey, you know what? I had so-and-so on the show and folks didn't know who that person was. And now look what they're doing. You know,
yeah.
I'm not saying I gave them a stepping stool, but I, you know, I gave them a thumbs up. I gave them an upvote when yeah. they started. You know what I mean?
You gave them the mic. You gave them a platform to at least tell people what it is they're doing, because there's no telling who's going to listen, you know, to the episode once you've put it out there.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm looking back at my wall of faces and I see Kimberly Bryant from Black Girls Code. I had her on in 2012, you know,
wow.
Like 6 years ago, you know. There's dozens and dozens and dozens of great stories like that of fun people doing amazing work and catching them while they are already going to become superstars, whether they're on our shows or not. It's just so nice to look back and say, look at that corpus, that that wall of content that we created, and having made hundreds of hours of audio has got to be really satisfying.
Yeah. And I mean, even for them, like, I know we've had a couple of repeat guests that have come back and just, you know, have said, like, this is what I've been up to. This is what I've been working on since the show. And they're like, they really love that Revision Path is giving this voice for Black designers and developers and creatives to really tell their story mm-hmm. about what's going on, because they may not get approached by any other design media to tell it. They may just have to say it on Twitter. They may have to be their own cheerleader. And in that way, Revision Path kind of, you know, is a megaphone for the work that they're doing.
Yeah. I also like the term that you used before when you said monoculture, because you're saying it's important to show people that there's lots of different folks out there doing amazing work. And I like that it's not just, hey, look, Black developers, Black designers. There's a spectrum within any subgroup of people. But it's interesting to see techies complain about things like browser monoculture. You hear that a lot amongst designers, like, wow, we shouldn't have just Chrome. So we're upset about there being just one browser, but we're not upset about there being just one kind of designer or one flavor of developer.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It is. So I think that if we as techies, no matter what color or we are or what our background is, can agree that lots of different kinds of technology are, you know, there's not just one language, there's not just one browser, there's not just one renderer, there's not just one design. That seems uncontroversial. We should apply that to our lives as well. And the more kind of mixed up our group is, our friends are, and our designers are, the better the web is going to be for everybody.
I agree.
Yeah, I dig it. So people can check you out at revisionpath.com, and you are on basically every podcast app, network, site that anyone could possibly find, which I need to up my game, because some of these, you're on SoundCloud, you're on Overcast, you're everywhere.
And we're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Revision Path.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Scott, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.